Welcome to the program for Wednesday, April 25th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the 3 o'clock hour, it's Pentagon Solutions, where we look at the challenges that the Pentagon is dealing with, talk to people both inside and outside the building on what those challenges mean for the agency, how they're trying to solve them. And today we're going inside the Pentagon to welcome back to the program Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment, Catherine Hammack. Madam Secretary, it's great to see you again, as always.
Glad to see you again, Francis.
Thank you for coming. The last time you were here, we were talking about this before we went on the air, was you were either right before or right after the last EITF event. Let's start there. What has been going on there? Spell it out for people and tell me what's been going on since the last time we spoke.
EITF stands for Energy Initiatives Task Force, and that's a team we set up to have a strategic approach to the Army's renewable energy development. We're doing renewable energy for several reasons, and the first is that it provides us with energy security on our installations. We've all seen the weather reports, and we've seen tornadoes and hurricanes and earthquakes and the devastating effects that can have. And if one of those takes power out to an installation, we then have to rely on generators and diesel fuel. And some of our installations aren't quite in garden spots. Quite often they're at the end of the line or the cul-de-sac of energy. And so if anything happens upstream, they go out. So we're looking to improve secure access to energy through renewable sources. The Energy Initiatives Task Force is taking a strategic approach by evaluating the availability of resources, the availability of land, mission impact, or regulatory impact, the cost for fuel, and the availability of transmission lines to determine what are the most viable opportunities for the private sector to invest in renewable energy on Army lands.
As you evaluate those factors at each installation, are you finding consistency in the things that you have to, the moves that you have to make to affect the change that you need to, or is each installation so unique and the potential renewable energy sources so unique that everyone is completely individual?
Everyone's completely individual, but the things we look at are the same. If you don't have transmission access, then it's going to be hard to move the energy around. If you don't have appropriate land on which to site wind or solar or a biomass or geothermal, then again, you're not going to be effective in a developer because no one's going to want to come in and build a facility that has marginal resources. So we're looking to optimize resources and to put projects out to bid that are very viable for developers.
What does the vendor see when, as you say, when these go out to bid, what does the vendor see that maybe isn't what a vendor typically sees in this kind of a business deal with the Army?
We're doing our homework more than ever has been done before. And by taking a strategic approach so that when we put something out to bid, we've done the environmental analysis and all the other technology evaluations to ensure that this is a biddable, developable project. I don't know if those are real words, but
they work for our purposes.
Absolutely.
That sounds to me like what the vendor gets is pretty much here it is on a plate ready for you or the competitor, your competitors, to take this project up and do it. There's not going to be a lot of legwork on the part of the vendor that wants to do the business.
Well, and the finance community will take a look at it and determine that you've mitigated a lot of the risk by doing your homework up front. And that means the developer is going to have better opportunity to finance it, which means that the Army will get better prices for the energy that we buy from these. And so we're talking about public-private partnerships where the private sector comes in and installs a renewable energy project. The Army would commit to buy some, if not all, of that energy from the developer for a fairly fixed price over an extended period of time, up to 30 years. So that makes it a very good investment from the private sector. It makes it a financeable investment. And if there is enough area and if there's enough capacity on the grid, the developer has an opportunity to perhaps sell back on the grid, which again will help offset the cost to the federal government.
You've used the term renewable energy a number of times, a term I don't hear as much anymore, although people used to use them interchangeably. Not you, because we've talked about this before. But let's redefine renewable versus alternative energy so that people understand the difference and why that difference, that distinction is important.
When we talk about energy security, I'm really talking about a resource that is not subject to supply chain or logistics. And so that is the sun, although it is an intermittent resource. We can look out the window here and see the sun comes and goes as clouds go by. The wind is an intermittent resource. Geothermal is temperature from the ground, and biomass is sometimes dependent upon growing seasons. So we know these are somewhat intermittent resources. The strategy for our installations could be a combination of all of them to give us energy security. And what we can't forget about is storage. To cover a solar installation at night, you're going to need some sort of storage. So we're investigating opportunities in energy storage as well.
The idea of renewable energy, maybe even as recent as 5 years ago, was probably not real high on the radar screen for a lot of folks in the Army and the other branches of the military. What's changed that? Has it been more the operational advantages that we've talked about before, or is it the cost structure and the barriers that are starting to come down to being able to make a cost analysis argument in favor of renewable energy?
We're looking at it from a threat and vulnerability aspect. The threat could be threats of nature, which we've seen that. Could also be threats from terrorist activity. One of the concerns that Homeland Security identified is a man in a backpack is the current threat. And so that puts natural gas lines and power lines at risk. The vulnerability is those lines going down and the inability to supply power for extended periods of time. So it's really energy security and reduced vulnerability and risks that have made renewable energy much more attractive. And to get back to your point, the cost escalations that we're all seeing in the energy sector, whether it's when you fill up your car or looking at your electricity bill, that does have an impact as well.
We've talked about, you've already mentioned some of the, I guess, the big three or big four when it comes to renewable energy. Later on in the program, I'd be curious to know if there are other sources that are starting to show themselves as the private sector sees that the federal government, not just the Pentagon, but other parts of the federal government really are serious about this. Certainly when the power of the federal government gets behind something, the private sector says, oh, there's a potential to make a buck here. And so we'll try to leverage that. We'll do that when our conversation continues. Pentagon Solutions today with Catherine Hammack, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installation, Energy, and the Environment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a company that's more than a century old and built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding. with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
Today is the day to make the switch to decide you're going to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. I checked my alarm monitoring bill, and wow, I made the switch to Ackerman with no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month. Now I save $25 a month. That's $300 a year.
Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive 2 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
Hi, this is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Thursday, April 26th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss progress and best practices with virtualization and data center consolidation in federal government. The panel includes government leaders from the U.S. Army, DHS, and NGA. Don't miss The Federal Executive Forum on Thursday, April 26th at 12 noon right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by Red Hat Information and DLT Quest Software.
I'm Emily Kopp. Coming up on tomorrow's Federal Drive, the government is trying to hire more people with disabilities, and some agencies could use help. The Labor Department has developed eFedLink.org for them. And we'll learn about the Defense Logistics Agency's latest efforts to catch counterfeit parts before they can harm troops on the front lines. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammack. We talked, of course, about renewable energy in the first segment and evaluating the various forms and which makes sense for which of the installations. As you look at these and you go around to these installations across the country and you see what the men and women are doing there, What's the connection that you're able to draw for them explaining why the Army is kind of shifting the way that they're doing things when it comes to the kinds of projects you're working on?
It's really about increased capabilities. And this really applies to some of our forward operating bases or our deployed forces. You can think of that small 30-man camp up on the mountaintop in Afghanistan where their job is to protect a village and to prevent terrorists from entering or to guard a transit way there. That small camp needs water and fuel. And 70 to 80% of their airdrops of resupply are water and fuel. So when we talk about renewable energy, the more we are able to make them net zero, so they're able to generate the same amount of energy they use, that's fewer airdrops. And fewer airdrops, you can think of an airdrop, big parachutes with big pallets coming out of the sky. It has to come down in a fairly open area, which means they've got to come down from that mountaintop to an open area and then go recover, and everyone knows where they're going to get those. So the number of airdrops we can reduce, that means that they are safer. So we've been able to take a few camps from an airdrop every 3 days to an airdrop every 10 days. I mean, that's increased capability because going to pick up from an airdrop could take a whole day or 24 hours. And so now they are more capable. It's more fight when they are able to find energy through other sources.
The last event that I saw you at was Senate Appropriations Committee, subcommittee hearing. We talked before we went on the air about the fact there's budget season in Washington. And so folks at your level, not just at the Pentagon, but across government, are spend a lot more time in the office these days than traveling. When you went before the committee, I looked at your testimony, watched a little bit of the hearing. What was the overall message that you wanted to take to the Appropriations Committee?
We recognize that this is a fiscally constrained environment. And as we draw down our forces, we've drawn down out of Iraq, and as we're drawing down out of Afghanistan, it is only appropriate that we reduce our budgets. So one of the biggest areas that has reduced in the field that I work in is we're not going to be spending as much on construction. So our military construction program has been reduced by about 32%. Another reason we took a reduction is because we're going to be downsizing our force by about 80,000 troops. And so we're doing that analysis right now to figure out where we're going to downsize and how we're going to downsize. So when I look at military construction, I don't want to start investing in a construction project that we may not need. So we very carefully went through those kind of construction projects that were requested from bases around the world and identified those projects that could go forward that would not be impacted by the total Army analysis. So, yes, we did take a reduction in military construction, but I believe it's only appropriate.
When I use the word simple, I don't mean to imply that the process is simple or the decisions are simple. But was that process as simple as determining mission critical, nice to have, and so on? Or is the analysis more complicated than that?
It takes into account those buildings, and we rate them on a quality scale. Q1, quality one, is the best quality building, might be a brand new construction within the last 5 years. We don't really need to do new construction to replace it. Q4 buildings are those that really are not in very good condition, where the cost to restore and maintain them might be very high. So you're going to get good payback. So first of all, we look for where we need to replace infrastructure. But the second place I looked at was construction of barracks. If we're reducing the size of our force, then maybe I should put a pause or hold on building new barracks until we decide where our forces are going to be based. One of the things we were asked about a lot was, what are we doing in Europe and what are we doing in Asia? And over the last 10 years, we have been reducing our footprint in both of those theaters. In Europe, over the last 10 years, we've shrunk by 97 different sites and returned land back to primarily the Germans. And in Korea, I think it's somewhere around 30 or so, 34 sites that we have reduced from, again, returning the land to the Koreans. So we've been implementing size reduction and footprint reduction in Europe, and we don't need Congress's authority for that. But for us to reduce our footprint in the United States and reduce our infrastructure as we size down the force, we need authority from Congress. And so the Army, as well as the other services, are fully in support of the President's request for BRAC rounds in 2013 and 2015.
Now, I saw the same response that you saw from Congress, from some members in particular. That request did not seem to go over very well. What's the education process by which you go, not just to the members themselves, but working with staff and so on, and say, we understand why this is not something that is easy for you to sell back home, but this is why overall it is good for the country?
If you look at prior BRAC rounds, prior to the 2005 BRAC, which is everyone's recent memory, those mostly had a 3 to 5 year return on investment. They're really focused on cost savings and cost justification. BRAC 2005 was a big BRAC round for the Army, and that was focused on force modernization and restructuring because we were growing the force, we were expanding the force, and we also had to change the way we fight from a symmetrical battlefield to an asymmetrical battlefield. And so that meant our training had to change. And so now we have armor and infantry that train together so that they can fight together because, as I said, it's a different kind of a fight. So for us, BRAC 2005 was a restructuring round of BRAC that will result in cost savings, but they're about in the 9-year time frame. I think Congress doesn't want us to do another one like that, and we're in full agreement. We have restructured to train the way we fight and to base appropriately. Now, as we size down, we can return back to the way BRAC was originally set up, which is a focus on cost savings.
You mentioned the analysis of the of your installation inventory and grading them Q1 to Q4, and I want to come back to that when we get back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions today is my guest, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammack. Our conversation continues in just a moment.
This week's Experts in Health topic is stress management, featuring Dr. Farzaneh Sabi, OBGYN with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the new Kaiser Permanente Gaithersburg Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sabi. The day-to-day demands of life in Washington, D.C. can be stressful. If unchecked, stress can lead to more serious medical conditions such as sleeplessness, high blood pressure, and even stroke. Here are a few tips I provide my patients on how to cope with stress. 1. Stay active. A simple walk around the block can be enough to clear your mind. 2. Eat more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. 3. Set aside time every day to do one thing you enjoy. 4. Get more sleep. And 5. Learn to say no by accepting that you can't do it all. Contact your doctor if you're feeling anxious, depressed, or have overwhelming emotions for 2 or more weeks.
Dr. Sabi was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Bill Fox from LexisNexis Risk Solutions commented during the panel discussion titled The Cloud as a Shroud, Fraud in a Digital Age, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
If you take more data, you understand how to score it. For instance, you might have a clinical risk score on a provider that you're looking at. Do you need to know, is it a driver of fraud if a provider's had 2 bankruptcies in the last couple of years? If a provider is within a couple degrees of association to a known fraudster?
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Information is flowing from more sources than ever before. Cloud-enabled enterprises can collect and analyze terabytes of data by leveraging the new technology. They can rapidly analyze an entire data set, developing deeper insights than what could be gained from looking at only a portion of the data, thus enabling better decisions made much faster. Booz Allen Hamilton believes secure, scalable, and automated cloud-based solutions can help derive actionable information faster. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Getting our vitamins. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus. With HHS HealthBeat, it looks like we're getting enough of at least some of the vitamins and other nutrients that we need. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looked at blood and urine samples from participants in a national health and nutrition survey. Researcher Christine Pfeiffer says this means that for some nutrients, few of us have deficiencies.
The prevalence of nutrient deficiencies in the general U.S. population ranges from less than 1% for folate and vitamins A and E to about 10% for iron and vitamins B6 and D.
Folate, for instance, is important for women of childbearing age because deficiencies can lead to birth defects in babies. It's found now in some foods fortified with folic acid. The full information is in CDC's second nutrition report. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfus.
The Washington Business Journal is seeking nominations for its 6th annual CFO of the Year Awards, recognizing CFOs and other financial executives in the Washington area for their outstanding performance as corporate financial stewards. Are you or someone you know a CFO star? Nominate them online at WashingtonBusinessJournal.com/nomination. Deadline is fast approaching. Save the date for the award ceremony, Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is Catherine Hammack, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And we talked about the assessment process a few minutes ago, ma'am. about the way that you assess the installations, the buildings that you have. And you talked about the Q1 to Q4 scale. Give me a little bit more detail on that. And I'm curious to know how that assessment process works.
We ask every installation to take a look at their infrastructure and to sort of rank them. A Q1 facility might be only 5 years old, and it's something that your standard maintenance funds can handle and keep it up to a good level of quality. A Q2 might be a slightly older facility, but again, your sustainment funds, which is what we call our operation maintenance budget, are perfectly adequate to sustain that. When you get into Q3 and Q4 buildings, those are buildings that are having a little more trouble. And to maintain them, the sustainment costs are getting higher, and you start to take a look at how you can best manage your costs. Q4 facilities are those that are in failing condition that need to be replaced. So you're either going to have to move the mission out of the building and demo it, or do significant cost expenditures to keep it. One of the challenges we have is we have a lot of historic structures, and we might have a historic structure that's in a Q4 condition that we have to move everybody out to do a complete gut renovation in order to restore it and then move people back in. But it is a very hard analysis at how we can best invest taxpayer funds in those buildings that need the attention the most, or where we have mission requirements that are most critical.
Are those analyses, are those grades assigned subjectively, or is there are there a series of formal criteria under which these buildings are evaluated?
There's a series of formal criteria, and quite often they'll work with the Army Corps of Engineers to get an engineering analysis of that building, cost to maintain, cost to restore, or is it ready for replacement?
How do you go about making the assignments then, as far as priorities go? I'm thinking of an example where maybe you have a Q3 building that is more mission critical than a Q4 building another place. It's in worse condition, but it's not necessarily as mission critical as another. How do you grade those, and how do you prioritize those, or is each case individual? Is each case unique?
The commands bring to us their prioritized lists. And those prioritized lists include the current condition of the buildings that they'd be replacing. You might have Q3 relocatables, and their utility costs are really high, and it's very difficult to maintain them, but they might be Q3. They might have some life left in them. But if you build a new facility, one of those that we looked at would replace 168 relocatables. Well, those relocatables might have market use elsewhere as construction trailers or some other purpose, but it would be best to consolidate operations in one building for efficiency, plus efficiency of work and efficiency on an energy aspect.
For budget purposes, what kind of return on investment are you looking for? How quickly do you need to be able to make the money back? And has the budget situation that we've come into in the last couple of years changed that dynamic at all?
I think the military looks at return on investment a little bit different, because it's really return on capability. It's all about the mission. And if we can make the mission more efficient and more effective with increased capabilities, then that is a priority. If we can reduce operating costs at the same time and reduce the need for extensive sustainment dollars at the same time, then that is part of the decision-making criteria.
There's a concept in your testimony to the subcommittee that I want to ask you about in a little bit, and it's the Army Facility Strategy 2020. I want to dig into that in a little bit, because as you talked about it to the committee, it's, I think, part of the overall Army strategy that has not gotten as much attention as some other elements. A lot of people have focused on the manpower issues and criticizing or praising the decisions that the military has made there. I don't think a lot of people have focused on the facilities end of it, and I'd like to explore that with you a little bit. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to ask one more thing about this part of it. as you go out, as your people go out and evaluate each of these buildings and try to understand their the mission criticality and so on, what are they finding or what are you finding when they bring you what their work is yielding that maybe you didn't expect to find, things that you didn't know or things about the inventory that you were not expecting to see?
There's a joke told by a general, and he said one of the things our soldiers are really good at doing without orders is that's expanding into available space. And so we might have buildings that could hold 300 people, and there's only 100 people in it. And it would be better if that's a Q4 facility to move those people into a Q2 facility and demo that building because that's the most effective use of resources. So when we go out and do our analysis, some of it's looking at how we can make optimal use of the resources that we have. And so part of our facility investment strategy 2020 is a demolition strategy, getting rid of relocatables and demoing excess failing buildings so that we don't expand into available space.
Let's talk about that some more when we come back from the break. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM is Catherine Hammack. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And our conversation continues on In Depth with Francis Rose.
How will you meet the fast-approaching deadline for federal data center consolidation? Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. One thing is certain. Traditional IT approaches won't work. With industry-leading technology from Cisco, EMC, and VMware, VCE VBlock infrastructure platforms require far less floor space, power, and cooling, lowering your facility's costs by 30% or more compared to traditional data centers. You get the performance, security, and scalability needed for mission-critical applications, together with simplified management solutions for a virtualized environment. And because every platform is integrated and tested before it ships, you can move VBlock platforms into production within days, not weeks or months.
Only VCE provides a converged infrastructure platform that's designed specifically for virtualized environments. And it's pre-configured and fully validated before it arrives on your data center floor. It's the winning proposition for fast, efficient data center consolidation. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal.
The $800,000 spending spree by GSA may seem like a lot of wasted money, but some experts say it's small potatoes when it comes to federal scandals. In our exclusive report, GSA Scandal in Perspective, Federal News Radio examines some of the biggest government embarrassments in recent history, including the $20 billion Air Force tanker scandal and as much as $60 billion in wasted money in Iraq and Afghanistan. Read our full report at federalnewsradio.com. Search scandals.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Catherine Hammack is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. And as I mentioned, one of the things that you talked about to the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee that you testified to a short time ago was Army Facility Strategy 2020. It's a broader component of the Army's strategy that we've talked about in brief so far in this hour. But give me the main concepts behind this strategy, because I don't think it's gotten a lot of attention yet.
Certainly, and there's four main ways we invest in facilities. First, there's new construction. We all understand what that is. The second is sustainment, and that is appropriately budgeting to sustain your current facilities. The third category is restoration and modernization. And when we appropriately fund restoration and modernization, it enables us to adapt our buildings to a changed use. For an instance, in our motor pools, the MRAPs are a little bit taller and a little bit wider than other vehicles. So we might need to modernize the equipment facilities so that they can drive in to be serviced. The building might be perfectly fine, but we need to budget so we can do that kind of modernization. That way we don't have to do new construction. So we need to appropriately fund restoration and modernization. And the fourth category is demolition. When a building is in failing condition, then we need to remove it. We need to remove our relocatables and our temporary buildings and replace those with permanent buildings that are much more efficient.
In each of those four components, where is money going? Where is it moving from?
We reduced our military construction budget by 32%. We talked about that earlier. Our sustainment budget has stayed roughly about the same, but we increased our request for funding in restoration and modernization because we believe that when you restore and modernize these buildings, you can avoid military construction, which is much more costly, and we think that's appropriate. And we also doubled the size of our demolition budget because we want to take down those failing buildings. As I said, you know, soldiers can expand into everything, so we want to ensure that we are using our facilities appropriate and not just leaving older buildings around.
As an observer, I wouldn't have thought of that, but as you explained it, it makes perfect sense. If it's standing there and it's not capable of meeting the mission anymore, if it's gone, it's something you don't have to take care of anymore.
Well, and space that we can use for training also.
Mm-hmm. What of those areas do you expect trend-wise will be the growth areas? Obviously, I'm not asking for numbers, but are you expecting that the new construction budgets will kind of stay in the trend that they're in now, which is headed lower, and the others will trend in the same ways that they are now?
I think that our MILCON budget will stay at a low level. I think we need to ensure that our sustainment, restoration, modernization, and demo budgets are adequately funded, because as we are reducing the size of our force, we still have leased spaces outside of the installation boundaries. We're going to look to move people back onto the base because some of these bases grew so fast, we used lease space to accommodate. And as we collapse in, that restoration and modernization money will enable us to adapt our buildings to a new use.
It would be very easy, I imagine, for the size reduction strategy and the construction and strategy and the facility strategy, rather, to operate on parallel tracks and never the twain shall meet. How are you trying to make sure that that doesn't happen and that these things are, that they interlock so that when you get to the end point in this process that you've accomplished something that fits together?
It's communication and education and working with our garrison commanders so that they understand what our facility strategy is so that they are able to operate under those conditions.
Overall, what are you seeing as you go around the installations around the country as far as you mentioned the restoration and modernization? That part of it, I think, of the four areas is most interesting to me because as the needs change, you mentioned the MRAP example, and that's a good example, but I imagine there are dozens or hundreds of examples like that of adaptability requirements that various installations have.
Absolutely. One of those that is interesting is a new strategy we've had on barracks, and it's been going on for about the last 10 years, where we've gone to more apartment-like settings in our barracks. And we call it the 1+1 strategy, where there's a small kitchenette that's shared by two different soldiers. As we've put those small kitchenettes into the barracks, we've seen a reduction in the usage of dining facilities. So we went through our dining facilities and looked at their utilization rates. How often is it used for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? If we closed one, could those who use it migrate to the other two? And over the last several months, we've closed 39 dining facilities. Now, these might be perfectly good buildings, and one of the installations I visited said, well, we're going to use it as a community center, and we're bringing in our education services, and we're bringing in some of our counseling services, because this is a wonderful building. And so they are moving out of Q4 facilities, smaller, older facilities that are failing, into a newer facility that used to be a dining facility and now will be a community resource center.
And probably centrally located on base, easy for people to get to, and everybody knows where it is.
Absolutely. It's got a great parking lot outside.
Yeah, everybody knows where the mess hall is, right?
That's right.
What other unintended consequences, maybe, are you seeing of some of the efficiencies that you're trying to achieve? That's a fascinating example to me.
I love the creativity and adaptability that we've trained into the military. And as I go out there, I keep hearing wonderful examples of what they're doing to adapt to what we're calling the new fiscal reality. And so you find sometimes when things get tight, that's when people are able to exercise that creativity and adaptability in multiple ways. Sometimes it could be what we saw over in Japan. In Japan, when the tsunami hit, the Japanese government asked every large energy user to reduce the amount of energy by at least 15%. And when I was over there last summer, we were up to 18%. When we ended the cooling or the heating season, no, it's cooling season over there. When we ended the cooling season over there, we had a 21% reduction in energy use. And that was through behavior changes. People thought about doing great things that didn't require an investment. And so I think that as we empower our soldiers and our civilians to be more creative and adaptable, we're going to find great things that they're able to do.
We've talked pretty heavily about business so far in the program. We're coming close to the end of our time together, and I want to ask you just about something cool that's coming on Friday that you're going to be a part of. We'll do that when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today, Catherine Hammack, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Military families make great sacrifices so that we can be safe, secure, and free. That's why we at United Health Military and Veteran Services are so honored to have been selected to serve families in the TRICARE West region starting in April 2013. United Healthcare serves over 78 million Americans nationwide. We have the experience and expertise to make healthcare better for our servicemen and women and their families. United Healthcare's expansive network provides access to hundreds of thousands of physicians and specialists. We focus on making it possible for healthcare teams to work together and share important information about your care. And at United Healthcare, we use innovative technologies to make sure you get the right care from the right doctor for your needs. Military families help keep us safe. So at United Healthcare, helping military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. To learn more, visit UnitedHealthMilitary.com.
Here's Zach Goldstein, Deputy CIO of NOAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by GDIT.
I think the solutions that we're talking about here to address the challenges and opportunities of big data will generate economic growth. There's an industry here that has to respond, and it becomes an engine for that.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Today's data-driven environment requires a sophisticated framework and advanced analytics to turn massive amounts of structured and unstructured data into actionable information. General Dynamics Information Technology looks beyond basic big data approaches and provides solutions tailored to the unique needs of defense, intelligence, and federal civilian organizations. General Dynamics Information Technology, dedicated to solving big data integration problems in any domain. For more information, visit GDIT.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Kim Natovitz of the Natovitz Group, where she'll talk about long-term care insurance planning. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about our firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The Washington Business Journal is seeking nominations for its sixth annual CFO of the Year Awards, recognizing CFOs and other financial executives in the Washington area for their outstanding performance as corporate financial stewards. Are you or someone you know a CFO star? Nominate them online at WashingtonBusinessJournal.com/nomination. Deadline is fast approaching. Save the date for the award ceremony, Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Catherine Hammack is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And I want to ask you about Friday, about Arbor Day, and what you have planned for that. You told me that story before we went on the air, and it was a fascinating one. But before we do that, I'm going to show you this picture, and we're going to link it up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's a picture of you at Fort Hood, examining a recycling program down there. And the story that you told me in the last commercial break about what you saw there, I thought was something that you should share with it.
Well, those guys there are doing a fantastic job. One guy's job is to take a look at all the recycling streams and to see how he can sell them and turn them into a money making so that the recycling center is self-supporting, which is a reduction in the amount of installation costs, which in a fiscally constrained environment is the right thing to do. And so he is able to support the recycling center. They expanded. He showed me some new compactors they had out there. And then he was so excited that they had excess money beyond their operations that he was able to donate to the 4th of July fireworks. So he was saying, we have the best fireworks around. So it was really a wonderful opportunity to have someone spend time to show off what they were doing, and it's the right thing for the Army and the right thing for the nation.
You just get to see the coolest stuff, I bet.
Oh, absolutely, and I wander a lot of trash yards.
I wouldn't guess that from looking at you, Madam Secretary.
Thank you.
On Friday, this is Arbor Day. And you have something going on Arbor Day that I think is very unique and just sounds terrific.
Absolutely. When Hurricane Irene came through, it took down the largest tree out at Arlington Cemetery, which was called the Arlington Oak, and it stood guard over the JFK memorial there. And one of the things that happened 3 years prior to Hurricane Irene is a group came out collecting seeds. And they collected acorns from the Arlington Oak and had grown seedlings. So at noon on Friday, we will be replanting three of those seedlings at the site where the Arlington Oak was. And I'm going to tie a yellow ribbon around the young oak tree.
And not sing the song, though.
No, I'm not going to sing the song for you.
Okay. No, I wasn't going to ask you to sing it on the radio, but if will you sing it at the event?
I don't think so, but we might have it piped in.
Okay, that would be fine. One other thing I wanted to ask you about before we close today, and it's something that I saw on Army.mil, and I'll link it up at federalnewsradio.com. It's called the Green Warrior Convoy, and I want you to tell me about that to close today.
Our Tank Automotive Research Division up in Detroit does a lot of testing and advanced testing on research vehicle technologies for our tactical fleet. And what they're going to be doing is driving a convoy of some of our latest energy efficient technology, hybrids and fuel cells and everything associated with vehicle technologies from Detroit to D.C., stopping by schools and colleges and communities along the way to help the private sector understand what the military is doing to advance research and science, technology, education, engineering, math, really promote careers in technologies by showing off some of the cool things that we are developing.
I think there's a misunderstanding that this will make more clear that renewable energy is really only applicable to standard issue type cars. You know, people think about the electric cars and the hybrid cars that you see on the road every day and think, well, that's it. And looking at this, that's obviously not the case.
Not at all. And we're even working on a fuel cell powered robot so that we can get some more range out of our robot technology.
My fear is that someone will figure out a fuel cell robot radio host, and then that will put the pinch on this job.
I don't think so, Francis. It would be hard to replace you.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, and I think that's where we'll leave it for today, ma'am. I appreciate you being on the program, as always. Thank you for coming in to talk to me today.
Thank you. Always a delight.